And hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Conquest Chronicles podcast. This is Matt here, along with Dina. Quickly, we are at, what, week five of the season? We are officially at week five of the season. And it,
wow.
And it seems like just yesterday. It feels like it was just yesterday that the season started. It don't
yeah,
even feel
it does.
Like it
doesn't feel long. Like a month.
It really don't feel like a month, but really we are, come next week, we are a month, we'll be a month into the season. I mean,
already so much has happened.
Good I know.
And bad.
Oh yeah, way too much happened, both good and bad. Way too much happened. A lot has come out. But Dina, how are you doing? How has your week been?
It's been good, pretty busy. What about you?
It's been good, you know. I've been previewing this game. I've been looking into this game all how can I say it? I've been looking into this game all week. And really you just get a sense of what could happen and what you're preparing for. And especially coming off the game against Utah. You just sit there and you wonder, what is it? Like, how I couldn't understand the win with Utah. Was it more of a USC winning the game, or was it more of a Utah losing the game? And really, you get that sense of just, I don't know. I mean, I would think I would feel a lot better if USC handedly won the game against Utah going into the game.
I think USC won the game. I didn't leave the game thinking, oh, wow, we should have blown them out.
Right. And if you look at the numbers, like, it's weird how you look at the numbers. You know how numbers really don't tell the story? How they say numbers really don't tell everything? And if you look at the numbers, you would have thought USC should have gotten obliterated. But really, the 16-11 penalties really said it all. Utah.
Yeah, that's who blew the game, is the refs. God.
Oh, my goodness. That was horrible. That was absolutely horrible. But then again, it's Pac-12 officiating. I mean, I'm not surprised, but at the same time, it's like, that's unacceptable. But key moment of that game, though, was Reggie Bush celebrating with Marquise Stepp. That has to be the image of college football all year. And do you see how quickly they went? Like, how quickly they threw that flag?
Yeah.
How they broke it up and they threw the flag. Like, they quickly got to it. It was unbelievable. Like, come on now. But it was mentioned, I think, Shotgun Spralling from LA Times and from USCfootball.com, Shotgun mentioned how, I think it was Shotgun or Keeley when they were doing the tunnel vision, and one of them mentioned that when USC played Texas at the Coliseum, and Deontay Burnett caught that touchdown pass, he shook hands with Matt Leiner.
I remember that.
They didn't throw the flag at all.
What people also were saying was this was Reggie Bush's first time back in the Coliseum, but wasn't he on the field when they announced, like, the all-decade team?
That was at the Pac-12 title game. So that was
wasn't in the Coliseum? Oh, okay.
It was at Levi Stadium, but USC contacted the NCAA to see if it was okay if he went in the locker room, and the NCAA gave him the okay to go in the USC locker room and basically just say
what's up
to the players and stuff.
Why would they do that but not allow anything else?
Well, I guess because Reggie Bush had to be there. The thing was, Reggie Bush had to be there for the all-decade thing.
He had to be there last Friday, too, to announce.
But it's different, though. See, it's not like if the game was at the L.A. Coliseum and all that stuff, then, yeah, it would have been a problem because it's a USC home game. But seeing that it's the Pac-12 conference, celebrating him, like honoring him, and it's not USC themselves, it's the conference, that's what made it okay. And the fact that it wasn't like, it was NCAA and conference compliance people there anyway. So that's why it was okay. There was nothing behind it. The NCAA, I'm sure, was like, okay, we'll okay it. But if it's USC asking to honor him and stuff, then that's a whole different story. But, no, I think USC Barstool said USC compliance had to move USC players away from Reggie Bush because they were waiting just to say hello to him. But what's so funny about it was Adoree Jackson waited for Reggie Bush outside of a USC game, or not a USC game, outside of an NFL game at the Coliseum when the Rams played the Bills. But again, it wasn't a USC setting. So I guess USC settings, that's where that's where they draw the line. But to correct you on that, this wasn't Reggie Bush's first time in the Coliseum since then. It was the first time he's been in the Coliseum for a USC game. He returned to the Coliseum as a member of the Buffalo Bills during the Rams' first year back in Los Angeles. So he was there, and that was when Bill Belichick, that was when Rex Ryan got all the USC players who were on his roster, and they were the captains for that game.
That's cool.
And Reggie Bush was one of them because he was a member of USC. So that's what was the – and what bugged me about it was that the NCAA keeps denying USC to allow him to honor him, which bugs me about it. And not only that, Colin Cowherd said that he felt that USC fans treated him dirty. And I was like, Reggie Bush gave him nothing but, you know, the USC fans gave him nothing but love. And he asked Reggie Bush, you know, did USC fans, were they treating you nice? I don't understand why he would say that. And there's numerous amount of number 5 jerseys that roam around campus at USC games.
Yeah. I mean, the student section was chanting Reggie their whole post-game show.
Yeah. I don't get, like, it's something that I don't think the NCAA understands. I pretty much said it like this. I think with the NCAA, they're deliberately not doing this because they know the effect that it's going to have on USC in a positive way. Because we already see the NCAA, what they're doing with player and likeness and stuff, which we'll get to that later because I have something to say about a new college football video game coming out soon. And in a few hours, I hope, but we'll get to that. But speaking of that, let's move forward. The real reason we're here is to talk Washington and USC. As USC's first meeting with Washington since 2016, where now they play Washington and Oregon State these next 2 years. They move up to Seattle, or they go into Seattle, play the Huskies. Washington's coming off of defeating BYU, I believe, 42-17 or 45-17. Really, it's going to be – it's a game between two ranked Pac-12 teams. USC this so far are 2-0 against AP top 25 teams. However, they have lost their only game on the road to BYU. This game is going to be interesting right now. And the fact that USC is going to be shorthanded in this game, USC will be missing three key players. And Dina, I'll let you go ahead and talk about that, actually.
Yeah, so Slovis is still going to be out with his concussion. Talanoa Hufanga out with a concussion. And Elijah Griffin, who left the game early last week with back spasms, is out too. So three starters. And, you know, I think it's especially a blow for the defense just because with these past couple of games, they kind of take a while to get started. And now they're down their best arguably their best two guys in the backfield.
Yes, that's the and that's the whole thing, is that USC will be – the fact that USC is going to miss Elijah Griffin and Talanoa Hufanga, USC managed without Elijah Griffin for a minute. You know, they shuffled around and everything.
Yeah, Greg Johnson shuffled around and they did manage. But Talanoa Hufanga had a
outstanding game these last weeks. I would say he's their defensive MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to be without him. Hufanga, as you mentioned, was in concussion protocol, and he had an AC sprain in his shoulder. So he has two injuries. But the concussion protocol was why he wasn't cleared, and wasn't cleared the whole week. And as you know, once you're in concussion protocol, really, that's a week. Like, that's automatically, that's a week. Because Stanford's quarterback,
KJ Costello.
KJ Costello was in concussion protocol, and by that time, you knew he was out. Keaton Slovis in concussion protocol. How the way he got hit, you knew he wasn't going to play that game, or you knew he wasn't going to play the next week. Once you heard Hufanga was in concussion protocol, yeah, you kind of ruled out that week. Elijah Griffin, you were a little bit more optimistic with Elijah Griffin, but again, Griffin out with the, you know, with back spasms. So he's out. Really, it's more of just, it's next man up. It's next man up. We know Matt Fink will start. That's, we kind of had that idea. But really, it's for everyone else, is next man up. USC is out of next man up. I believe CJ Pollard will be starting at
Chris Steele. I forgot to mention when we were talking about Elijah Griffin coming out, he came in.
Yes.
So he's going to get some playing time against Washington too.
Yeah, and I mean, these are things that these guys got to step up. And look, we knew this was going to happen. We knew that guys would have to step up and play right away.
Also, Isaac Taylor Stewart is going to play.
Yes, he's been cleared.
Against Washington.
Yeah, he's been cleared, which is good. But he's back. Again, you have Greg Johnson, Isaac Taylor Stewart, Chris Steele. I believe we might see some Chase Williams at safety too. Chase Williams might see some time at safety. CJ Pollard will see some time. Also, Clay Helton said Max Williams actually might see some playing time too. Max Williams tore his ACL during his senior season at Sarah High School. He might see some time. So really, it's just guys stepping up. It's next man up. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Britton Allen at some point at safety too. But
yeah, this week will definitely test the Trojans' next man up mentality.
Yes, especially given that Jacob Eason, he's been playing pretty well too. He's been playing really well this
Yeah, he has.
I mean,
ten touchdowns, two interceptions.
Yeah, and I mean the Cal game. The Cal game was the Cal game because Cal has a good defense, and how the way they've been playing. They play, as a matter of fact, they play Friday night against ASU, I believe, in Berkeley. But just given the fact of how the way Cal is playing, I believe that's the only bad game really that he's had, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, his completion percentage on the season is 73.1. So, yeah, he's had a – despite that Cal game, a pretty good start.
Well, Dina, now what are your expectations going into this game for the offense? You know, new quarterback Matt Fink, third quarterback going in. After that, they have a walk-on mm-hmm. quarterback as their backup. Brandon Perdue who is their walk-on safety. He will be the backup quarterback. I know Amon-Ra St. Brown got some reps. Tyler Bond's got some reps at quarterback. So they have guys who took some reps at quarterback.
Amon-Ra St. Brown took reps at quarterback?
Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tyler Bond took reps at quarterback. So if something happens, heaven forbid, something happens to Matt Fink, we're really entering dangerous territory here. Because now they're down to one healthy scholarship quarterback. Yeah. So, I mean, what are your expectations for this offense? Because after what we saw from Fink, Fink really relied on the big play where that fueled him. Not going to get away with it against Washington here. So, I think coming into this game, we'll see something with him. What are your expectations for the offense, though, against this Huskies defense?
Well, they can't afford to stall because, you know, Washington at home, they're going to put up some big numbers. I think Matt Fink needs to come out and, you know, go through his reads, take his time, and if it's not there, then he has the mobility to buy some time and make things happen. Also, I think our run game last week was not good. I think it needed to be a priority in practice, and it needs to be a priority going into the Washington game too, because you need to have all your cylinders firing against Washington at home. And I think hopefully Marquis Stepp has shown enough that, you know, they'll put him in third down situations, goal line situations, because no one's tackling Marquis Stepp if he's 1 yard away.
No, not at all. Nobody's going to even come close to touching him, especially. Are you going to stand in front of a 6'1", 235-pound running back? I mean, unless you're a defensive tackle or a linebacker, I don't think you're doing that.
Yeah, he proved he could do it in high-pressure situations. That was it, third or fourth down that they needed to convert?
Third down
to run the clock out and get the win against Utah last week. So, and he did it. He held on to the ball. I know last year was an issue of him holding onto the ball, but I think he made his case last game, and he continues to make his case in practice too.
I agree with that, actually. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think this is the game where he has to get carries. Like, USC has to get him carries. Him and first off, the run game got to get going, first of all.
Right.
Let's start there. The offensive line got to generate a push. So let's start there if they get the run
game. You know, I think also if the run game isn't getting going with Stepp and Malapai, then I think they should give it to – or not Stepp, with Carr and Malapai, I think they should try Stepp.
Yeah, because Stepp has been averaging about, 6.5 yards per carry throughout,
right,
you know, in the games that he's played. He's proven he can break tackles. He's proven he's up for that type of game. You know, he's proven that. If you're going to go with the run game, why not go with that? Why not? Why not try to go for that with Stepp? Malapai will do that for you. But Carr and Carr is more of an, how can I put it?
Elusive.
He's more of an elusive runner.
Yeah.
When USC had Rojo and Cedric Ware, and Malapai, and when Malapai was going, Malapai was struggling to get carries, which I don't get. So I don't know. I hope this changes where Stepp starts to see carries. I'm not saying he should be the feature back, but it's time to let him get some carries. It's time to let him play that type of game, especially when you're struggling against the run. Because he should have got more of it against Washington or against BYU, against their three-man front. He was getting yards. On three carries where you get 33 yards, we got some issues on how you're handling the running back rotation, Graham Harrell, if you're going to go with the run game. But they're going to really need it. But I don't know. This game could be a point where the air raid could get going because Washington has a young secondary as well. They have a pretty young secondary. I mean, you have Miles Bryant who is expected to be a Pac-12. Let's be real. He's going to be a Pac-12 first team all defense by the end of the season. He's going to be all over the place making plays. But USC has multiple wide receivers, multiple talented wide receivers. And going up against that, that should help. Then again, Jimmy Luck have seen the air raid before. Granted, it's not to the caliber of the USC wide receiver, so it's different. But Jimmy Lake know how to slow down a heavy pass game. But unlike Washington State, USC has running backs that they can roll with. So that's how I see it. But what are some keys to the game for you, Dina? What are some keys that to this game that USC needs to go by to win this game?
I think they need to get their run game going. And I think the Chris Steele and the guys who are starting in the backfield need to step up and make some plays.
I think also the keys to this game.
Pass rush always. Pass rush is always a key, especially against. Luckily, Washington's Jacob Eason isn't a mobile dual threat quarterback. That's for the past couple weeks, actually.
Davis Mills was the only quarterback in a scrambler. But one thing to keep in mind is Washington has a veteran offensive line, and they've only allowed 5 sacks all year. They've only allowed 5 sacks all season up to this point. It's going to be interesting because that's actually
coaches went back and did this, but it would have been beneficial for them to watch the Cal game and see what they did to disrupt Eason because he had zero touchdowns in that game.
Yeah, but we don't have a secondary like Cal, unfortunately. But that would be a good idea if Pendergast does do that. I mean, Pendergast hasn't been stellar, and
his defenses have started out. Scary. Yeah. And then once the game gets going, they kind of redeem themselves.
Well, they have a bend don't break mentality.
Right.
And they have a bend don't break mentality. But we've seen that with Chris Wilcox when he was defensive coordinator for USC. But they have Justin Wilcox, thank you. They have this bend don't break mentality. I mean, if it works against Washington, then you'll take it. But that offense has to put up points too.
Right.
The offense has to put points up too. And that's the one, and that's the biggest thing about it. If they don't put up points, then it's all for nothing. It is all for nothing, as Dina has the hiccups there. But here's an X factor. And I will say this. This game is going to come down to the trenches once again. If USC can create pressure on Easton and disrupt the timing in the passing game, then USC should be fine. But they're going to have to learn to contain the outside runs, the reverses, the misdirection.
Right.
They have not been able to contain that worth anything. I also think this is where Clancy Pendergast is coaching for his job right now. I truly think so. Because if Pendergast – here's what I have to say. And this is where we really have to start really looking at this. And I think Clay Helton has to really look at this with his defense. If USC gets gashed again, USC's given up to close to 400 yards a game. I can't remember when they did not give up 400 plus total offensive yards. If USC gets gashed once again, I think you have to look at pulling the trigger in letting Pendergast go at some point. Because there's no way you let him, there's no way that defense is going to be like that. Now, I don't know. What if they get gassed right away? Then you still got to look at it. I think you look at it at the end of the season where you got to let them go.
Okay.
Because it's going to cost you, because you can't keep making the excuses for him. You can't. This year it's, oh, well, it's a young defense. We said it was a young defense. And if there, and there's no sign of progress. There has been no sign of any type of progress, no sign of making adjustments, nothing. If they get gashed and there's no adjustments, you really have to look at it. Because you'll have the bye week to settle in a new defense. You have the bye week where you can go with something simple, and then you have Notre Dame. You have to start looking at that possibility. You have to. I'm sorry. Pendergast, as much as Pendergast has helped this USC defense, he has not done anything to adjust.
Right, yeah, he hasn't.
And it's time to start thinking about that change. And if they don't, then I don't know what to say. But it's time to start thinking, but it's, they got to get it together. They have to. But I think an X factor is on the defensive line, is in the trenches. The USC offensive line has to play better. Also, penalties. Penalties got to be limited. They got to limit penalties. They have to limit the penalties. So limit the penalties, win the battle in the trenches, and take care of the football. They can't give points like they did against BYU. They cannot give points. Outside of that, I think that's what it boils down to. That's what it comes down to. Any predictions in this game? What are some predictions?
I think it's gonna be high scoring. I think last week I said Step gets his chance, and he kind of did, just like two carries. I'm going to go ahead and say again that Graham Harrell finally sees what he has and ups his carry time. But as for the score, I'm going to say, this is hard. I'm going to say
28-0. It's going to be high. It has the potential to be high scoring. That's for sure.
I'm going to say 45.
Or 45 to, as long as we don't hit 60s like we did with the UCLA and Washington State game.
I'm going to say 45-37.
Oh, so a close high scoring game.
Yeah, 45-37 USC.
What do you see that? Like what do you see going that way? What led you to
that?
Yeah,
I think Matt Fink is going to hit Michael Pittman for a lot, like he did against Utah last week. I think he's going to throw it up, and Pitt is going to get those 50-50 balls.
Yeah, well, he has size over him, so there, I see that as an advantage. I, on the other hand, I see opposite. And before people sit there and say, how dare you pick against USC, I picked against
USC. You picked last against them the last couple weeks.
No, I didn't pick against them against BYU. I picked them to win against. I picked USC to win a close game. No, I said USC would pull away at the end.
Maybe it was Stanford that you didn't.
I picked USC to win against Fresno State, and I picked them to win against BYU. They beat Fresno State. Didn't I say they would hit 50 against Fresno State? And I got that completely wrong.
Who'd you pick against Stanford?
I picked Stanford, but I think I picked them narrow. I think I picked them by 10, actually, and I was wrong on that. I picked Utah to win in a blowout or in a two-score game, and that turned out to not happen. But this one, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like the Washington defense will throw off Fink. Their defense is going to throw Fink off. They're going to bring pressure. Fink, I think they're going to cause Fink to make some errant throws. And I don't know. The 50-50 thing is really going to bite Fink. It's really going to bite Fink. Like, they can't keep relying on that, because there is going to end up to where they double team or they throw bracket coverage at Pittman, and Pittman's not going to come down with over two people. So I think that not only that, but the defense, as depleted as they are right now, I think that's what's going to be the issue, is that. I have Washington winning 38-20. It's on the road. USC has a history of not performing well on the road for whatever reason. I don't know why. I want to, but this is a game where I'm not confident in them winning this one on the road. If anything, I think when Dina and I talked about this, I said this is a tougher road game than Notre Dame. I honestly believe this is a much tougher game than Notre Dame. And though I think this is actually going to be the best team USC faced so far on the schedule.
Really?
I think so. Then again, that's not counting when they play Notre Dame in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not counting when they play Notre Dame in 2 weeks or Oregon coming up. Though I think they can beat Oregon and Notre Dame. I think Washington will be the best team from an overall standpoint. Washington is the best team from an overall standpoint that they have faced so far this season. I think Utah was the best defense that they would have seen this season. So far, that remains to be true, because they did limit them. They did limit USC's offense, but USC made several key big plays that exposed the Utah's secondary. And that secondary did get exposed quite a bit. But I'm going to go 38-20 Washington. Now, if you have listened to this show, you should know that that tends to mean the odds are in USC's favor. Because the last two times I picked against USC, I have been wrong.
Hopefully.
And then the last two times I picked USC, I'm 1-1. So, but this one, I got them winning. I got UW winning 38-20. I think Jacob Easton throws for 3 touchdown passes and throws and maybe has a pick in there. Though USC has, I think USC only has 1 pick so far this season.
Yeah, against Fresno State.
Yeah,
I know for sure it was against Fresno State. I don't know if that was the only one.
I don't know if that's the only one. That's a great question. We'll have to look that up. But other than that, speaking of that, this is USC's first time traveling to Seattle since 2016. And we all know what happened in 2016. That was the fateful game that had a lot of us thinking USC is going to the Rose Bowl.
USC was also an underdog, weren't they, in that game? But the difference here is that
USC was not it.
Is
Jacob Easton is not Jake Browning.
Right.
Jacob Easton actually is a better quarterback than Browning. A much better quarterback than Browning. This game is probably going to make me think I wish Browning was back.
For sure.
But looking this up, USC has won four of their last five games in Seattle, believe it or not. The last time they lost to the Huskies in Seattle was 2009.
Really?
USC, Washington has not beaten USC in Seattle since 2009. And do you remember that game?
If it's the game I'm thinking of, I do, but I thought they had lost after that too, unless I'm thinking of 2009.
It was 2009 They beat Ohio State the week before they beat Ohio State.
No, I'm thinking of something different then.
Yeah. You weren't thinking of that game. You're probably thinking about the Thursday night game when Sark was the head coach for USC. And that game was at the Coliseum.
I'm not thinking of that game. I'm thinking of one in Seattle. Because I was at that game. That was a train wreck.
No. So, 2009, Barkley was hurt. He got hurt in the game against Ohio State. He hurt his shoulder. And Pete Carroll sat him for that game. And Aaron Korp was the quarterback, was the backup. And USC drove in that game. Like, they led him down the field to drive that game. And let's put it like this. Aaron Korp was horrible in that game, and USC lost that game by a field goal. Jake Locker was the starting quarterback at that time. And that was Steve Sarkisian's first year at Washington. And USC and the Huskies beat them. And it was an afternoon game, coincidentally. Since then, USC has defeated the Huskies in Seattle in
20... Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant, super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
I want to say 2012. Yes, in 2012. They beat them in 2012.
Did they barely beat them in 2012? Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
No, they beat them by 10, I believe. They had that game. They beat them pretty handedly. They beat them in 2012. They beat the Huskies in 2007 in Seattle. So I got to go as far back to think. So 2016. There's another game I'm missing. Oh, 2005. I think 2005. Yes. Unless USC Athletics is wrong. Also, Also, so I don't know if you remember this, Dina, but what, do you remember what USC's name was before the Trojans?
You mean Washington?
No, USC.
Yes, it's something religious, wasn't it? What was it?
The West. I don't remember. Hold on. I have to look this up. Actually, I know how they got their nickname, but I don't remember their nickname beforehand. I don't think, but it wasn't always Trojans. I know that much.
No, it was something religious, I thought.
This is how bad of alumni we are. We don't even remember. We don't even remember. That's how bad we are. We're horrible. Well, they were
before. No, the Methodists. See?
Oh,
I knew it was something religious.
The Methodists. All right, there we go.
USC Methodists.
Can you imagine if that stuck there, if that name stuck? The USC Methodists.
Nice.
I really wouldn't sit well. Who's your school? Oh, I'm a Methodist. No, really. What are you? No, but so before Washington was known as the Huskies, their nickname was the Sun Dodgers.
That just makes me think of someone afraid to get sunburned, like a really pale.
That sounds like a minor league. Sounds like a minor league baseball team for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Yes, their team name, their nickname was the Sun Dodgers. They were called the Sun Dodgers. So there's some history for you. There is some history for you, but you know how it is. You know how it is. So, we're going to make some picks here. We're going to make some picks. Dina and I decided that we're not only are we going to do Pac-12 picks, but we're also going to pick some big games as well, some key games. So, do you want to go Pac-12 first?
Yeah, let's go Pac-12 first.
Okay. So, we're going to do we're going to go Pac-12 first. After last week, did you see speaking of that, were you asleep for the UCLA and Washington State game
night? I wasn't. I was at game night with my friends.
My boyfriend. You missed out.
Yeah, you texted me that and I was like, what the hell?
You missed out on a wild game. So, as everyone knows, Kyle, shout out to Kyle, who's been on our show before. Also a Washington fan. I told him what was going on, and he just didn't believe it. Next thing you know it, UCLA took the lead. UCLA was down 49. UCLA was down 49. What was it? They were down 49.
I thought you said 49-17.
Yes, they were down 49-17 in the third quarter.
So did they just get interceptions, or what happened?
Turnovers. Turnovers and three and outs. Turnovers and three and outs. And they kept getting the ball.
But, seems like UCLA has a big comeback at least once a year.
Well, everyone's saying, oh, this is a program-defining comeback. This is a program-changing comeback. They said the same thing about in the A&M game.
Mm-hmm.
And look how that turned out. Now, if they get obliterated by Arizona, then that should say a lot about program-defining things. So, yeah, let's stay away from that. So, anyway, Friday, as of record time, we have Arizona State at Cal. Arizona State just lost to Colorado at home. Cal is the only undefeated Pac-12 team. They're the only undefeated team in the Pac-12, ranked 15, and our contender, actually, looking pretty good. Who do you have in this game? I feel like this is going to be a close game, actually.
I'm taking Cal. There were times I picked Cal.
I got Cal in a close one. I don't think the Bears cover, but I have them winning a close one. I think this game is going to be pretty close, and it's going to be a fun game. But Cal's defense, Cal's secondary against Arizona State.
I think Cal's defense against freshman Jaden Daniels is going to be killer.
But then again, they went on the road in the East Lansing and they beat Michigan State. Though I don't think they should have beat Michigan State. They beat Michigan State on the road. Cal is not like a big hostile environment. It's not really. Mm-hmm. Cal is not a daunting place to play. All right, California Memorial Stadium is not daunting to play at all. So, therefore, ASU winning wouldn't shock me, but I have Cal winning this one in a close game. Pac-12 after dark, too. Next up, we have Stanford at Oregon State. This game is on the Pac-12 network. Stanford is 1-3. Really just fell off the hinges. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened to Stanford. They lost at USC, UCF. They're on a 3-game losing streak, actually. They lost at USC, UCF, and only managed single digits against Oregon. They lost to Oregon 21. They lost at home to Oregon 21-6. Do you think Stanford turned it around in this game in Corvallis at Research Stadium?
Yeah, I think this is the game they need to do it for sure.
I got Stanford winning this one by 2 scores. I don't think Oregon State is quite there yet. Stanford, this is a rebound game for Stanford. Mm-hmm. If there's a game they're going to rebound, this is it. Right. Not only that, Oregon State do have a new wide receiver, though he's not going to be playing this season.
Mm-hmm.
And Devin Williams, the former USC wide receiver, transferred to Oregon State. So Oregon State's been high on him. So I have Stanford winning this one in a rebound game. But I do think Stanford's in trouble. Moving forward, I think this is the year where Stanford really falls off. Another Pac-12 after dark game on FS1 in Washington State and Utah. Utah coming
it's
off a
be
loss.
An interesting to game.
Yes, air raid again. I got this is going to be this one. I think it will be close. You know what? I'm going to go Washington State here. I think Washington State rebounds at Rice-Eccles Stadium and wins a narrow game because of the air raid. But that's the thing. If it's at home at Rice-Eccles Stadium, it's going to be loud as I don't know what. But Washington State's defense has been suspect. That's the thing. But if anything, USC exploited the air raid. They exploited Utah's secondary. You know, I'm going to go Washington State in a high-scoring game. I have Washington State winning this game in a close game on the road.
I'm going to say Utah in a close game. I think they're going to rebound. Yeah, and Rice-Eccles is a very hard place to play.
Oh, it's loud. Dina, it's loud. Like, it's deafening loud. It's not like BYU where you have – never mind, I'm not going to say that. I don't want to get thrown off the air. last game we have on the Pac-12 slate before we move on to our next game is UCLA and Arizona. As everyone knows, UCLA won that outrageous high-scoring arena football comeback of a game, 67-62, I believe. Do you recall seeing the same thing, or how do you see this happening?
I'm picking Arizona.
I'm going Arizona. Khalil Tate is going to be a huge factor. How they contain Khalil Tate is going to be something. I think Khalil Tate is the huge factor, but I think it's going to be a close game.
Yeah, I don't think Arizona's going to blow them out just because they haven't shown any dominance, really, and Khalil Tate hasn't been him.
No, it's going to be a close game.
If it's really himself or that one season he had was an outlier, but yeah, he's going to need to step up during this game. This is the game to do it.
I agree with you on that one. Now, we're going to go with some key games. So, looking at the schedule, some interesting games. You have Texas Tech, Oklahoma. I'm not going to pick that one. We're not going to pick Wisconsin, Northwestern. Let's start off with Ole Miss and Alabama, even though we know the result of that one. Hey, it was either that or Virginia Notre Dame next.
Let's do that one. That one's okay. More worthy.
Let's go
Notre
with
Dame.
That one.
I'm picking Notre Dame.
I'm picking Notre Dame by a touchdown. I think I think Virginia's quarterback, he's going to keep it close, but Notre Dame tends to will themselves to victory in games. I'm going with Notre Dame on this one, unfortunately. Hey, we could have picked. Hey, Ole Miss has not played Alabama in years, and the last time Ole Miss and Bama played, Ole Miss beat Alabama. I'm just saying. That's why I went with it. Let's go with this one. Baylor and Iowa State. That should be a good one.
What's Baylor's record?
Baylor is 3-0 with wins over Stephen F. Austin. Hold on. Stephen F. Austin, University of Texas, San Antonio, and Rice.
So they haven't played anybody.
They haven't.
And Iowa State is, they lost against Iowa.
I want to say they're 2-1. Yes, they're 2-1 with wins over Northern Iowa. They beat Northern Iowa by 3, lost to Iowa by 1, and blew out Louisiana Monroe 72-20.
I'll pick Baylor.
I'm going with...
I like Charlie Brewer. I think he's a talented quarterback.
I'm going with Matt Campbell and Cyclones on this one. I think the Cyclones win this game. Number 24, Kansas State and Oklahoma State. You can watch this game on ESPN+.
I'm going to pick Oklahoma State in their rebound against Texas, coming off that loss against Texas last week.
I'm going Kansas State. I'm going opposite. I'm going to go Kansas State. I think the Wildcats is playing some good football this year, so far, without Bill. I think Bill Snyder retired, but Kansas State's playing some good football. They've looked pretty impressive. I'm going with the Wildcats on this one over Oklahoma State in a high scoring affair. Though it wouldn't shock me if Oklahoma State won this game. Their offense has been off the charts. Now we have, there's really not that many good games this week. We have, here's one, Ohio State at Nebraska. Game is on ABC at Lincoln Memorial Stadium, I believe. At Memorial Stadium in Lincoln. That's what it's called, Memorial Stadium in Lincoln. Ohio State, number 5 in the nation. Nebraska. They with Adrian Martinez going up against Justin Fields, the black shirt defense. Game day is in Lincoln. Who do you have?
Though I would like Nebraska to pull off the upset, I have Ohio State winning.
I got Ohio State winning, but I don't think they cover. But I want Nebraska to win this game. I want Nebraska to be back, but I don't foresee it. in this game. Now, I got another one for you. We're going to go off the rails here, everyone. So be ready for this one. Dina, seeing you are a coffee person, you go all over the place to have different coffees. You go to the hole-in-the-wall places that we never heard of. You go to Starbucks. You go to Coffee Bean. You go to Redwood's coffee shop. I don't know. You probably go to some coffee. You go to the boys. You go to the Girl Scouts coffee shop, too. You go to coffee shops that I've never heard of. So, Starbucks, which was founded in Seattle, Washington, and Coffee Bean, which was founded in Los Angeles, actually. Who are you picking? Are you picking Coffee Bean, or are you picking Starbucks?
Well, Starbucks coffee's trash. Well, every time I go, I only go because there's a drive-thru, and the Coffee Bean in Redlands doesn't have a drive-thru. I do prefer Coffee Bean coffee to Starbucks coffee, though Starbucks does have good food.
Yeah, they do. They have good fruit for breakfast.
Their food is, I think, well, Coffee Bean, okay, Starbucks has good sandwiches. Coffee Bean sandwiches need some work. But Coffee Bean does have good muffins and bagels. But if I had to pick, I'd pick Coffee Bean just because I'm a big coffee person and Starbucks coffee is trash. Every time I'm disappointed and I think, why did I go here? I'd never like it.
I'm with you on coffee. I'm with you on the Coffee Bean thing.
I don't think either is really great. Like, I'm not saying Coffee Bean's like, oh my God, it's so amazing, but it's better than Starbucks.
Coffee Bean, you're on point with Coffee Bean's coffee, because Coffee Bean's coffee is actually pretty good. At a coffee day, at Coffee Bean, so. But everyone knows I'm a cookie person. And to me, it boils down to cookies. Boils down to the cookies. What type of cookies do you have? I think Coffee Bean's cookies are good, but they're not that great. Also, Coffee Bean lacks. Here's where Coffee Bean lacks in the department. Coffee Bean don't have any other drinks outside of coffee that I have seen.
Yeah, they do. They have teas. They have ice blendeds, which is a frappuccino, basically.
Okay. Do they have dragon fruit mango?
I do not know about that one.
They don't have a dragon fruit. So therefore, I have to go with Starbucks here. Starbucks has great cookies. They have very good cookies. They have a s'mores frap whenever that's in. They have s'mores frap. They have also have dragon fruit. But the cookie set it over for me. If Starbucks had subpar cookies like Subway, then that's where things would change. That's where I would have to draw the line. And everybody knows cookies, me and cookies are a thing. So with that being said, I think that will be all for us tonight. Any final thoughts?
If you see a Starbucks or a Coffee Bean and you're really into coffee, go to Coffee Bean because Starbucks is gross. Coffee.
You heard the woman.
Starbucks isn't good. It's convenient. That's my final word.
It's convenient for if you need it.
Because they're on every corner and they have drive-thrus.
That's the one thing that irks me. Before we go off the air, that's the one thing that irks me. So, Dina, you've had Tommy's before, have you? If you say no, Dina, we really have to have a serious talk.
No.
Okay, we're having a serious talk after we go off the air. So, the thing that irks me with Starbucks is that they're building a Starbucks on every single corner. And the fact that they're building it as if Starbucks is a McDonald's, and it's nowhere close to a McDonald's. And what bugs me about it is that they're putting up Starbucks at places that don't really need it. So getting to the story here, sorry, I was looking at something. No, that is not my family, everyone. Getting to something, there used to be a Tommy's on, and if you were in Santa Monica in the 90s to 2014, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There used to be a Tommy's in Santa Monica on Pico and, I forgot the other street name in Santa Monica, but there used to be one down Pico in Santa Monica. Always used to go there, always. You had a drive-through, you could sit there, get food, all that. It was my go-to place outside of Dairy Queen. No, Foster Free. It was my outside place outside of Foster Free at Santa Monica College at the time when I was going to SMC. Well, they closed down the Tommy's there. And you know what went up in that place?
Starbucks.
A Starbucks. As if they needed another one. As if they couldn't pick anywhere else to build a Starbucks. As if you didn't need one in a 2 mile radius in Santa Monica. Starbucks was what went there. And it made me upset. It really made me upset. And I was very unhappy about it. And on that note, that's where we end the podcast. Be sure to follow us on C Chronicles SBN. You can follow us on Twitter at that handle. You can also follow me on Twitter at Matt A. Lowry.
You can follow me at Always Compete.
And be sure to listen to our podcast on Apple iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify or the Megaphone app. Also, rate us. I know we have one rating, and it wasn't a good rating. So rate us, please. A rating is better than no rating, so at least rate us on Apple iTunes or Google Play. Say we suck if you think we suck. Say we are the UCLA. No, don't say that. Don't say that, actually. But until then, we'll talk to you guys next week, and fight on, everybody.
Fight on.